Hi, you're listening to Conversations with Musicians with Leah Roseman. In episode 19, season 1, I was delighted to welcome the inspiring musician Hushyar Khayyam to my home to improvise and speak about his perspectives on improvisation, the music of Central Asia, the Middle East, and Western classical music. We spoke about some of his beautiful recordings in his large discography and his creative process. He also spoke about his role as founder and producer of Tehran Records. I include one of our improvisations as a separate bonus episode. Unfortunately, there were technical issues with some of the other improvisations we played together that day. During the conversation, we discussed quite a few of his albums, and you can find them linked on his website in the description of this episode. It was really inspiring for me to meet Hushyar, and I hope you'll discover more of these conversations with a wide range of musicians by following this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. All of these episodes are also available as videos. The link is in the description.
So first of all, I have to say, Hushyar Khayyam, thanks for coming here and playing with me, because I'm very new at improvisation and you're so experienced, and it's so much a part of your way of working, I think.
It's true. The pleasure is all mine, I have to say. I'm happy that you invited me to this great project that you're doing right now with all the great musicians that you played with. I listened to some and enjoyed it really very much. And improvisation is a part of musical language in the Middle East, where I come from. And when you go to music class as a child, it's a completely different process. You don't start off with middle C, and you don't start off with the written notes. Sometimes you just start off with a teacher playing a tune for you and then ask you to play it back. Mm-hmm. And actually even work at it a little bit. Just make your own compositions right from the beginning. So it's a different mentality. It's a different way of learning music. It's a different approach. And yeah, so this is why improvisation is never something separated from your musical education.
So I'm curious, I mean, you had Western training as a classical pianist, and as a composer you use different idioms, you've done so many interesting collaborations, and I want to talk about some of those for sure, but I'm really curious about your travels in Central Asia and learning all kinds of different styles and instruments as well.
Yes, true. First of all, this is a very large, it's a vast land, it's a very large area, and it's an area with cultures of thousands of years old, and different religions, different cultures, different ways of life. There have been always the Muslims, the Christians, the Jews, the Zoroastrians, others living together in this large, vast land, and some were nomads, they were traveling from one place to another. Some were the gypsies, and these people have integrated so much of each other's music. So much has been integrated between the Jewish music and the Persian music, and with the music of Iraq or the music of Afghanistan or the northern part in Tajikistan, Uzbekistan. So there's so much happening there, and it's not enough. I mean, one lifetime is not enough for one person to gather all of it, but it's possible to gather a sort of a general knowledge or a general understanding of what that music is about. And this is what I've been doing for the past definitely for the past 15 years of my life. I've been just traveling and getting myself exposed to these different types of music, and this is why when I start with my own compositions or with improvisations, I always start with an improvisation. I never try to specifically portray or use any of these different types of music. But I think I myself have become a sort of a melting pot of all these different types of music, and they just nowadays they just find themselves in my music without me thinking too much about it. And yes, we've been talking together about what improvisation is about and how do people start improvising. And I know that you have been telling me that it's a recent thing that you're taking in your career, in your profession, in something that you also love to do. And I have to say, I was very surprised playing with you and already realizing that you're doing it. You're actually doing many things that I had to think about. You're doing them naturally. Maybe you didn't have the time to practice them as much as I did, but it's already there. You have the ears, you have the whole classical training is coming to use for you when you do it. And honestly, I think they're not really separated at all. One thing that comes to my mind in improvisation is how these long line of performer composers, they needed something to hold on to in order to start something right from the scratch. So what do they think about when they start something? When two people in jazz music or in music of North Africa or music of Kurdistan, when they start to play together, what do they do? What do they think about? They're actually really simple musical matters that they hold on to. One thing is the scale that they start off with. They definitely think about the scale. Sometimes there are the known scales. This is more in the case of the traditional performer composers. They start off with one of their well-known scales. If it's a Persian music, they will start with one of the scale from Radif. They might play a Segah or Abu Atta or Shur.
Could you demonstrate any?
Yeah, sure. In a second, I'll show it to you. That's actually very interesting. If it's an Azeri Segah, it sounds one type. If it's a Persian Segah, it sounds different. If it's an Arab Segah, again, is a little bit different. But basically, Arab Hijaz is very much similar to the Segah or to Shur. You realize that they're starting with a scale. And many times these scales have different names between different people over there, but they are actually common.
Mm-hmm.
And many times these scales have different names between different people over there, but they are actually common.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at one of them, the Maghom Rast, which the Arabs use. Very much similar to the Phrygian, with a little bit of a difference. The major difference is that the second degree is not tempered. They use the quarter tone. They call the so-called quarter tone. They're not really quarter tone.
Okay.
To get to that subject, they actually use half of a minor third. So if you have a natural minor third, do mi bemol, then right on the middle,
sounds right.
This is the half step between minor third. I always tell my my Western educated colleagues, friends, when we play together and I want that sound from them, if they weren't trained for it,
mm-hmm.
I give a simple solution. It's not 100% correct always,
mm-hmm.
because this is an interval that sometimes based on the music the performers change it, maybe a little bit lower or a little bit higher. But when I want to guide them, I always say, well, play a minor third and place the other finger right in the middle,
mm-hmm.
of that minor third. Then you almost get it right.
Okay.
So this is like a practical... would you like to try it?
I can try it.
Yeah. So let's start from a Shur of La, the A scale.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, you can play just a natural minor A minor, natural A minor without the second degree. So that's really good. Now, what I want from you is to play the minor third. That's it. No, just, you always have to go, yes, you always have to go from the second degree to the third degree.
Oh, I see, okay.
It's like a sequence.
It's really hard for me to.
Your ear tells you it's wrong,
yeah.
But it's not. A little bit higher. That's it. Even, you see, out of habit, you always lower it a little bit,
mm-hmm.
because your ear tells you, because you're accustomed to the tempered scale. Everything. But if you play it a few times, then you actually hit it. So if you have, by natural, I mean not tempered.
Right.
Yeah, so you play a minor scale. The way.
So look, and halfway between those two notes.
Yes. That's correct. That's
okay.
Correct. So now you now you can play and then you resolve it. That's it. Now you got a melody. You got a very nice melody.
Okay.
You want to do it again? Just play these three notes really slowly. I'll give you an accompaniment. A dissonance
mm-hmm.
tone,
mm-hmm.
even in Persian music and Arab music,
mm-hmm.
it's a dissonance tone. So there's always emphasis on it. It's like that you know, like a leading tone.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of going up, it goes down.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Okay.
This is why it has a lot of tension inside it. There's a lot of spirit into
mm-hmm.
it. Anyways, the point is there are. Small things like maybe a scale
mm-hmm.
or a portion of a scale, a tetrachord, four notes of the scale, or three notes, a trichord
mm-hmm.
of the scale that you start off with. And always in this music, you think melodically. Even if you're playing a harmonic instrument, which is an important instrument really
mm-hmm.
into that music. And even if you play a harmonic instrument, you have to think about it melodically. You have to think how that scale is put horizontally. Now you bring it up and you make it vertical. So to demonstrate, if we have this, you already hear it's very different, right? But if the performer is playing. Together and you got your chord. This becomes a part of your harmonic language because this is how the musicians hear that music.
Mm-hmm.
They know that you're playing the scale degrees and they know which scale you're playing. They play with you. The other thing that you hold on to when you improvise with, let's say, a musician, Kamancha player from Iran or a ney
mm-hmm.
player from Turkey or other places, if you play with an oud player from Kurdistan, is that the musician expects you to already understand the structure of your melodies by the motifs. And this is very, very close to the Western training of the motifs, how the motifs are working, and this common ground actually helps a lot. It helps a lot for a Western musician to understand the Eastern music, because they are motivic. The
mm-hmm.
the music is motivic. You have lots of motifs. You see this motivic structure in the paintings, the Middle Eastern paintings with all these ornaments. being repeated around
mm-hmm.
one picture in the miniatures, or you see it in the ceiling of a mosque. You see all these little motifs coming out of the arabesques, or coming out of the little abstract representations of flowers and leaves, or you see it also in the calligraphy, the way that they use the calligraphy. You could use these pictures later. You see this whole repetition of these little small motifs becoming a vast, very large
mm-hmm.
picture in the end altogether. This is how the music works, just the same way. You have these motifs repeating themselves almost forever. But with each repetition, you hear something is developing.
Mm-hmm.
And something is added to it. There's a texture coming out of this. These are things that you would think about when you improvise with a musician, when you sit together. A musician starts playing a little four-note theme or subject, for that matter, and immediately you hear the other person responding by first the exact repetition
mm-hmm.
of that, but phased out like a canon,
mm-hmm.
and then adding one note or two notes to it, or making it backwards, returning to it. It's a real-time process of composition. The major difference is that many times you don't quite get the beginning and the end. It's not a closed form.
Mm-hmm.
The form develops itself by the setting that the musicians are in, and it has other parameters for that structure. I think this is what makes that music both interesting and also in a sense more approachable than what people normally think about. More approachable for a Western musician, because you already have the common understanding, the common techniques with the motifs, with the melodic structure. It's just that you are not accustomed to the open structures.
Mm-hmm.
You're accustomed to the four-bar phrases,
mm-hmm.
mostly. Not always, of course, but mostly.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're taken out of that four-bar phrases,
mm-hmm.
and the closed structures, you might feel a little bit lost in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
This is how I was able to sit with the musicians, some of them, or many of them, without any sort of Western training. There are some musicians I played with, they don't even read notes. If you play, a symphony from Beethoven, compared to Brahms or Mendelssohn, maybe they wouldn't even quite understand the difference. But the way that they approach the music is so natural, and it's so skilled that once I play with them, it becomes extremely interesting. One thing that was very very surprising for me was how strong the real-time memory is for the performer composers in that region. And the reason to that is they are used to hear things and memorizing it right at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And they can demonstrate incredible power, the power of memory,
mm-hmm.
at the real-time memory. They would hear the whole section and they would just play it back for you.
Mm-hmm.
One of the greatest experiences I had was with another Iranian musician by name Amir Aslami. He's actually now living in Canada, in
mm-hmm.
Vancouver. He's a wonderful musician, a virtuoso ney player.
Which is a flute.
Yes, the flute. And he's also a very well-trained Western musician, but he started with the Persian music
mm-hmm.
in the beginning. And we started to work together on a project which later was published in Iran in 2011 by name All of You. That was the name of the album. And I remember we would start working together with some improvisation, with some idea. We would say, we would think about the motif, about the harmonic language a bit, and the general structure of the piece. And then we would start, as we did today together, an improvisation. And maybe that would be like 4 or 5 minutes of improvisation. Then Amir would stop and say, wonderful, Usha, that's really good. Let's go back to it. And once we get to this section, I want you to play this instead of that. And after 4 or 5 minutes of total improvisation, I wouldn't remember anything. And I used to say, well, Amir, I don't remember exactly what I did. And where is that section? And he would say, well, of course, it's very simple. Look, you played this, I played that, you played this, I played that. And then this was the first section. And then the second section came like this, you played this. And he had the memory. He had a gigantic memory. To me, it was unbelievable. It was incredible. How he would remember 5 minutes of pure improvisation from scratch, and he would remember it, and he would know how to go from one section to another. This is because he was trained this way from the beginning. Mm-hmm. He didn't start off with a middle C on the piece of paper, and the teacher would say, this is a whole note, and you have to count to four, and you play it with the first finger, and this is mezzo piano, so on and so forth. No, he would go to the teacher, and the teacher would play a tune and say, okay, now play it back. Mm-hmm. You know, this idea and this way of training has made these musicians incredible.
That's a beautiful album. I've heard quite a bit of it, along with many of your other projects. And that one, you used quite a bit of post-production editing to layer sound.
It's true. Yes, it's true. That was an experiment I wanted to go through with the Persian music, but also with other music around that area.
Mm-hmm.
And what I wanted to do was to see if I can get counterpoint out of these melodies played by flute, and normally you just hear them in a solo performance, one flute alone. And I wanted to see what the result will be if I have 4, 5, 6 or more layers of these lines together and just make a whole texture out of these counterpoints.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why I had to go through that post-production, and I had to do it myself. So I had to learn the technique of mixing and editing and seeing how I can work these out. And the result is what you hear in the album now. I'm happy you liked it.
Yeah, and that maybe do you want to talk about Tehran Records in your life as a producer?
Yeah, wonderful. I'm happy you mentioned. Yes, around the same time, maybe a little bit later, I decided, as I was living in Tehran, I founded my own record label in the beginning with I had to start with my own music because I just had to start from somewhere. But then I invited musicians to collaborate with me, and then other artists, visual artists, film directors, literary men and women. And I wanted to work this out as something that would present the music of that region to others outside.
Mm-hmm.
Tehran Records is not a record label for the music which is produced in Tehran.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, well, I have to correct myself, it's not entirely for the Tehrani musicians.
Mm-hmm.
No, not at all. I mean, Tehran Records was based at the time that I was living there, it was based in Tehran, but it had musicians from Bulgaria, it had musicians from Uzbekistan, it had musicians from Afghanistan, it had musicians from India, it had musicians also from Iran and from Tehran
mm-hmm.
as well. And the idea was, as a Western musician, you yourself, if you go to a record store and you see a new CD and you read, say, on the CD it says such and such piece, by Hoshea Kayyem. Well, you wouldn't know who Hoshea Kayyem is, and you wouldn't get it because there are thousands of choices. You might not get it. But if you see that it's a Tenon Records, oh, this is something. I want to know what the sound is from that region. What is coming out? And that region has its own voice. It has its own music. It has its own philosophy behind music and behind the art. And then this is a chance for all those musicians over there to be heard here in Canada or in Europe or elsewhere in Japan, wherever. This was the idea of Tenon Records. I'm explaining this for you to understand why I called it this way. And it's also a record label for the people in Iran or in Tehran who have not heard the music outside of the country or there are so much happening outside, which I wanted to bring inside. So it has a double function. One function is how to introduce the music which is being produced there for people outside, for the world, and to bring the music of the world to the people who might have never heard of that music.
And I believe you even have poetry in translation into Farsi?
Yes, a little bit. We have two albums specifically on that. One is based on Shahnameh, which is probably the most epic poet of Iran through history by Ferdowsi. It's in English, it's called Book of Kings.
Mm-hmm.
This is 1200 years ago, so it's old. And the other one is the contemporary poets of four different regions. We have poetries of Nazım Hikmet from Turkey. We have poetry of Anna Akhmatova, the poetess from Russia, the Soviet Union of the time. We have poetry from Nazar Rabbani, which is Arabic, from Syria, and we have poetry from Pablo Neruda, from Chile. And all of these poetry is read in Farsi with music. And that particular album, I composed the music myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard a little bit of it. And could you speak about Raz, your very acclaimed recent album?
Yes, Raz was the continuation of the idea of bringing the music of Iran and do something new with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the previous works, I had worked on the traditional, sort of the classical traditional music of Iran through works like All of You and some others. Music for tar and piano is also very much similar in that regard, but the difference is that it doesn't have any mixing or editing or post-production process. No, it's a very plain performance.
And
but in Raz,
I just have to say, it's such a beautiful album. It's so meditative. And so the tar is this figure eight shaped lute, just for people who don't know.
Yes, the tar is a long neck lute, like
mm-hmm.
a guitar or a lute from Iran and from Azerbaijan.
Mm-hmm.
And the album, we just plainly called it Music for Tar and Piano.
Mm-hmm.
So the name is not poetic at all, but I think it suits the purpose. I'm glad you like that album. And Raz is somewhat different because I have never worked specifically with provincial folk musicians to bring them entirely into my own composition.
Mm-hmm.
I learned a lot from them. I used the themes or harmonic ideas in my own compositions,
mm-hmm.
but I always translated that into something else, with the Western musicians playing the flute or the piano or the string quartet. This time I wanted to use the folk musician and embed it into my own composition. And the result is Raz. What is the difference with Raz is that it's an album that you hear the group of five musicians sitting together playing and singing and exchanging instruments, talking to each other, even commenting while playing,
mm-hmm.
so many things, saluting each other even
mm-hmm.
in the music. And then you, on top of this, you hear the string quartet playing along, you hear the prepared piano as I played it, and you hear the electronics
mm-hmm.
being added to it, and the percussions, and the vocal artists, the both male and female vocal artists singing together with it. So it's a whole new combination of sound.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because when I wanted to do this album, when I wanted to work this album, I went to my former teacher, Mohammad Reza Darvishi, wonderful musician, Iranian musician, who is specialized in folk music of Iran. He had traveled more than 30 years with a jeep around Iran
mm-hmm.
and collecting music of Iran. He's Al Bartok in a
mm-hmm.
sense. And I consider myself as his student, as his pupil. And I spoke with him informally in his studio about this project, and I said, I want to do this. And I remember Darvishi telling me that, Hushyar, you're for 1001 reasons you wouldn't be able to do that. And when I asked him why, he mentioned that for the very first reason is that your folk musicians will not play tune, and they will not play in tempo. Which is true in a sense, they're not playing in tune by means of tempered scale. They don't play in tune. And they don't play in tempo by means of the metronome. But they have their own tempo and they have their own tuning system.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I told him, for that very reason, I'm going to try doing this. And we had a laugh about this. But later, I think, when he heard it, he wasn't entirely unsatisfied. So, yeah.
And in terms of your compositional sort of arc, I mean, you're young, but you've been composing a long time, many different. Do you think the 15 years you spent in Central Asia, has that changed?
I've spent much more.
I've spent
almost all my life in Iran and the neighbor countries. I have spent a few years of my life, around maybe 10 years of my life outside of Iran
mm-hmm.
altogether, but the rest of it I have always been, the other 30 part
mm-hmm.
of it, 30 years of it. And this is why the music of that place is, I'm familiar with it. And the Western training has always helped me to approach it in a more thoughtful way, in a more intellectual way, in a more aware, with more awareness
mm-hmm.
of what is happening in that music. I think I owe so much of it to my Western training. And this Western training has always been there. All the years I lived in Iran, I was taking my piano courses, I was doing my compositions and everything. But now, if you ask me, to me, they all just seem one. I cannot separate them. I can separate them as much as I separate a sonata from Beethoven with a lead from Schubert. I mean, yes, they are two different pieces, two different types of music, but I guess we have the same approach for both these pieces. A sonata from Beethoven is not that much different from a lead from Mozart, or opera from Mozart, or a lead from Schubert. It's the same thing. It's the same process. Everything. So is approaching music of Iran or Iraq or any of those places. Yeah.
And you write. I think you said you write with pen and paper.
Oh yes, I do. I do. I tried writing with computer, and it was not working.
Mm-hmm.
I was very unsuccessful on composing with computer, and
mm-hmm.
and it's not something that I would promote for every musician.
Mm-hmm.
there are musicians who want to take a career in film music and or I don't know, TV game music,
mm-hmm.
Video game music. They have to use computer.
Yeah.
There is no way around it. But composition for me is a different process. I take time to compose. When I improvise, I do it right there.
Mm-hmm.
But when I compose, I go back to it sometimes for years,
mm-hmm.
to one piece, one idea, and reshape it, rework on it. And this is why with that device and computer, especially with the Control C, Control V, you know, the copy and paste, that is something which I think can be extremely, extremely dangerous. It can be very, very harmful.
Yeah, I think in a few of your albums, you've used a prepared piano, and not everyone listening will have a clue what that means.
Yes, I have almost never used prepared piano, but
okay.
I use my hands
and
I play on the strings.
Okay.
So I wouldn't be able to call it prepared because I'm not using gadgets.
Okay.
I don't stick things into my piano.
Okay.
And I don't like to do that because
mm-hmm.
it's my piano.
Okay.
But I play a lot on the strings. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I do that. And the result is somewhat closer. I wanted to find a way to eliminate this this medium,
mm-hmm.
something which is in the middle, the keys, that hammer. I wanted to see what happens if I play straight on the piano. And many of the works that you've heard from me and you mentioned, I have used this technique. Now it has become a sort of a, now I have a repertoire of different sounds.
Right.
Well, it took some years for me to figure out, and with some pianos is very difficult to do. With an upright pianos, generally it's very difficult because you cannot control really.
Yeah.
With a grand, it's much easier, but pianos are different. Each piano has its own specific specific things,
mm-hmm.
and. The work that you do on this piano might not work with another piano because
mm-hmm.
your hand has to shift between the iron frame and it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many things into it, but in general, yes, I now have my own vocabulary of sounds that I use quite often
mm-hmm.
to express what I want to say musically,
mm-hmm.
and. Yes, but almost always they're just plainly played on the piano. You hear this in Roz. The second track of Roz is just a solo piano piece. And if you listen to that, you might not even get what that instrument is. It
mm-hmm.
sounds like the percussions of a music healing ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
It's like percussions that they used to play for the person lying on the floor, and they dance around her or him playing those percussions for hours
mm-hmm.
until he or she is healed.
Yeah.
And I came up with a way to do that with the piano. I was very happy when I found it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very particular sound. And in some other albums, All of You has one piece which you hear a lot of strummings and a string,
yeah.
and then you hear the harmonies coming out of this strumming. You actually hear chords, there's a chord progression happening. And I use the middle pedal, left hand combination of all together.
Mm-hmm.
And in that album specifically, as we talked about, I used a lot of post-production, so I played lines of this and I put them together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We talked very briefly before about the idea of synesthesia, and you were saying when you were teaching at a school in Iran that you found a lot of the teenagers had this ability to see colors with music.
That's true. I used to teach at the Girls Conservatory, and these were a group of, they were separated. I also taught at the Boys Conservatory, but that's another story with the girls, and then they had the orchestra of them together sitting, and I conducted them.
Mm-hmm.
But at the Girls' Conservatory, there was something which really was very, very surprising to me. And I realized that, I'm not sure if this is true, I cannot prove it by any means, but I realized that with the girls, the synesthesia is more apparent. I might be wrong, it's just an observation I had. Or maybe they care more about it,
mm-hmm.
maybe. And they think more about it. And I realized this, and since I myself have some degree of that,
mm-hmm.
It was very, very interesting to me. I think we spoke about this, and you told me that you also have.
No, my older daughter, who's an artist, and has used it in her work.
She uses that in her
yeah.
artworks.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
So that's why I was even aware of it. So I was just curious.
Amazing. Yes. Yes, synesthesia is I think it becomes a tool in the end for a musician, especially for a composer or an improviser.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes a tool because you need that when you have it and you're used to it, then you need it. It's like food for you to continue your music. It's a way that you develop your music. You do not develop in improvisation, you do not develop the way that you develop in composition. There are two different factors. In composition, you have time to reflect upon what you introduce in your exposition, and then you work it out in your development. It's a time-consuming thing, and you know that some people took years of doing that. Brahms took 23
mm-hmm.
or 21 years, 23 years, I don't know how many years, many years, for his first symphony.
Yeah.
And why is that? Because he was reflecting on
mm-hmm.
those themes. This is not how it works in improvisation. In improvisation, it just has to come. So you think about the colors, you think about the texture, you think about the coldness or the warmth of the sounds.
Mm-hmm.
You think about the weight, is it light, is it heavy? You think about other things, you think about the smell, the taste, and I can say that for me at least, this is always one of the major factors. Some chords have a specific color. This definitely has a purplish, reddish, purplish color for me, and if I compose and I want to, I have an album called Seas, 7 Days.
Mm-hmm.
And in that album I wanted to portray the 7 days in the sea. And one of them is the sunset. And then you hear these chords in the form of a chorale coming. Because the color is there.
Mm-hmm.
And B flat minor has a different color. Every person has his or her own way of approaching it. Some people see it with colors, some people see it with a taste, with a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is altogether synesthesia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a very good question.
Do you have any advice for young people starting out in composition?
I would say they should start with improvisation,
mm-hmm.
not with composition.
Mm-hmm.
Because composition is the result of improvisation. First, you have a feeling coming inside of you, and then maybe that feeling finds its way through some words, and then it becomes a prose. And you work that prose out, it's your poem. That's your composition.
Mm-hmm.
That's the end result.
Mm-hmm.
I think the process is always starting with improvisation. And yes, I very much encourage musicians to improvise every day, I would say. Every day, I would say, don't practice your piece, but improvise. It's that important. And improvisation is not something happening on the instrument only. It's something that you live with it during the day. You sleep with it. You wake up with it. You dream about it. You're walking the street, and it's some part of your mind is just engaged. Is working on that improvisation, and then you find it on your instrument as well.
In an earlier conversation, you had said to me, don't start improvisation with a clever idea.
Oh, yes.
Did you mean that so it's not contrived, so that you can be truly open?
It's true. the problem arises when we want to say something smart, and then we end up saying nothing, because nothing is as smart as we want it to be.
Yeah.
And I don't think we speak, the way that we speak or communicate together is that we will try to speak smart. Sometimes we do, but normally we're in a conversation, we're talking. And I think musically it's the same. We have learned to express ourselves through years of study, through years of practice by words. And that has somewhat put an end to many other ways of expression for us.
Mm-hmm.
We were little, we weren't able to express ourselves entirely with words, so we would paint, we would dance, we would shout,
mm-hmm.
we would bang on the piano, we'd make noises, and that was our way of expression. Now I can say all my anger with my words, with really soft little three words,
mm-hmm.
and that anger coming out just puts an end to all my feeling that I could project it on my instrument or on my painting.
Mm-hmm.
It puts an end to that. And I think this is not right. I think we as musicians have to embrace our feelings with the sound, with what we have.
Mm-hmm.
I think we did talk about this a little bit the other time we met, and that is how much improvisation could be coming back as a curriculum, as a study curriculum of
mm-hmm.
young musicians. And I think this is something which is, even by now, is missing so much.
Yeah.
I don't know how many music schools are for the youngsters who promote that,
yeah.
or work on that, or care. Everybody cares about having a very good violin teacher, which is important. Everybody knows how important that is. You don't want to start with a mediocre teacher. You want to start with the best. But then, what about improvisation? What about the way of approaching other music? What about thinking somewhat out of the tonality? Yes, you learned so much about major and minor, and you played so many pieces in that. But what about a Shura Sago, or a Indian Rago, or a music of the indigenous people here who have amazing music, which is so different? You know, all that is something that is by now missing. And I think that's probably the biggest fault, the biggest void
mm-hmm.
in music education today, in general.
Well, I mean, one advantage now with the internet is people can choose to be more connected and to reach out more.
That's true. And some people find the necessity, find the need, like you yourself, and you take on with it. You start to improvise, and you expand on that. You work with, you play with different musicians, and with every performance there's something. You might say that you don't know what you're doing, but that's exactly what it is. You don't have to know everything, but it's good to develop the skill to remember what you did.
Mm-hmm.
You play it through, and one section is over, how about you stop and you reflect upon what you played. What did you say? What did
mm-hmm.
you play? What was the scale? What was the tempo? How many different chord progressions did you use? What happened, really?
Yeah.
What happened to that little piece? It's just as much as when you play a sonata from Brahms and you want to analyze it to see where the exposition is, where the development is, where is the recap, and where is the second theme, what is the modulation, where is it happening, how is it happening, all that, no? I think just the same with improvisation. It's, you might start from scratch, you might start from total darkness, you walk total darkness, but then you will see, when you look back, you see the light. There was a light all the way through, and you can see, oh, this is the choice. These are the choices I made.
So I guess a useful tool could be recording your improvisation and then playing along with it when you listen back.
That's good. That's good. Even the better one is when you play. You play short phrases, and then you try to replay them.
Yeah.
That's even better.
Mm-hmm.
and you sing them. If
yeah.
you can sing them, sure you can play them.
Yeah.
Always. It's a golden rule.
Yeah.
No? It's a golden rule. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for this conversation. It was really, really interesting.
It was a great pleasure. Thank you, Leah.
Was there anything you wanted to add that we didn't cover?
Not that I can think of. I think for now, for one session, that's quite good enough. I'm teaching one course though in Carlton U,
yeah.
Which is specifically on. It's called Introduction to the to Performance Composition.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Introduction to the World of Performer Composers.
Mm-hmm.
What do they do? And this is a full class, and it has more details. When we speak about the skills, we speak more in details. When we speak about the different types of approaching these different music, we speak more in details about it. When we speak about how you transpose the melodic idea into a harmonic idea or textural idea,
mm-hmm.
what are the different ways? Then it becomes more detailed,
mm-hmm.
for sure. And that is really for young musicians with well-trained background in ear training, in performing one instrument at least.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes a little bit more more detailed in all that.
Mm-hmm.
But the general idea of improvisation is when you start off, especially if you're starting off with another musician, give it time. And I used to remember speaking with a great musician from Afghanistan, a wonderful musician, and he told me that, you know, he was much older, when you start, don't start with the first thing that comes to your mind. Give it time, think about it, maybe something else comes. If the second one comes, don't play it off. Think about the third one, and then choose. Was a very fine man, and I thought this is one of the best refined ideas that I ever received, tips that I
mm-hmm.
received for improvisation. Because he said, then you have choice. You can choose between these different ideas, and
mm-hmm.
which one do you want to play? Then, and he was. He was always keen and he was always persistent in saying that you're not listening.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't you listening? You have to listen. More than saying, you have to listen. It's true. You have to listen to the musician that you're playing with. You have to see what he or she is looking for.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be interested in things that he or she is doing. And you have to be receptive.
Mm-hmm.
Then it works. Yeah, I think... one of the things that young musicians have trouble with is that they think they think too much about the audience. They think
mm-hmm.
the audience will be bored, so we have to say a lot to them. We have to give them a lot,
mm-hmm.
like giving them so much food.
Yeah,
it's not true. They will be patient if you will be patient. You have to be patient. Don't give too much. Go with a little idea, one motive. Stay with it. Give time. Breathe. Don't forget to breathe. These are all really important.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the mind has to be clear.
Well, those are great words of wisdom.
Not mine, for sure.
Well,
thank
they
you
are.
Very much.
They are.
Well, I'm quoting my great teachers from past.
Yeah, we all need mentors.
Yes, yes, for sure. Thank you so much,
okay.
Leah.
Season 1 of this podcast had 20 episodes, and Season 2 continues with a really interesting mix of musicians talking about their lives and careers with perspectives on overcoming challenges, finding inspiration and connection through a life so enriched with music. Please follow this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts to be informed about each new episode.